Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the Blazer Banter Podcast. I'm Eric Gunderson, the Trailblazers beat writer for The Columbian. This week we're joined by Connor Hutchton, who writes for The Classical and Vice Sports. And he's a huge Dallas Mavericks fan, so he updates us on the state of the Mavs, how they've been since the Rondo trade. And we also talk playoffs, which are obviously right around the corner, just a few days away. And stay tuned for more podcasts. Hopefully we'll have one before the playoffs start, and we'll definitely have some more as the playoffs roll on. You can follow Connor on Twitter at CONNORHUCHTON at Connor Hutchton. Hope you enjoy. How's everything where you are?
It's really nice. It's like, it's in that sort of like 60 degree mode where it's like a little bit cool, and it's kind of, this is my favorite kind of weather, so I'm feeling pretty good, even though I wish it would rain for the sake of California.
Yeah, that's, we all hope that it would rain a little bit more in California, since our entire nation depends on food from California. It looks like Mordor outside in Portland. It's very, very dark, very gloomy. I'm sure it's going to rain some more soon. It already rained a little bit today. And it's also gloomy because of the specter of some Nick Batum's knee injury hanging over the city. No, we still haven't gotten any update on how severe it is. He's supposed to have an MRI today. But, yeah. Playoffs are soon.
Playoffs are very soon. They are incredibly soon. And it's interesting that you mentioned, but it's interesting that Batum has knee injury. I mean, that's terrible. But it's Parsons that's the big worry for Dallas right now, is the Parsons knee injury. That's sort of nebulous and is sort of hanging over everything. Because it sort of seemed like a slight soreness type injury. He'd be back in a couple of games. It's been six games now. He's not going to play tonight, so that's six or seven games with no Parsons and really no hope without him. So it's a similar situation, I think, even though, maybe the Blazers rely on Batum a little bit less even. But, yeah, it's a concern.
That is a concern because, I mean, Parsons was kind of their big money guy this summer, and you'd think that he's one of their – I mean – you hope it's not like a long-term injury, but I mean, for the playoffs, I mean, how is Dirk looking these days? I mean, do you think he can still put on a couple of great playoff performances before it's all said and done?
He's had a really weird year. His defense has taken the turn for the worse. And that's expected. That is what it is. You protect that with Tyson Chandler, and you hope that whenever you play a Dirk Amari lineup that you just score a ton of baskets. His offensive season has been really weird because he started off really hot, if I remember correctly, and, looked amazing. Completely went into a terrible phase for a couple months where he was missing wide-open shots that he never misses, and then had a good month and then had a couple bad months, and then the last couple months – he's been good again. So he's looking pretty good right now. It's sort of been a weird year. I mean, overall, it ended up being like a pretty solid year for him. Definitely declined a little bit, but still solid enough. Still, his three-point shooting went up a little bit, and he started making some of the open threes that he was missing for a lot of the year. So he looks pretty good. I would say he's like B-plus Dirk right now. He might turn into like playoff monster Dirk, though. I wouldn't put it past him because he's been pretty good lately. I think maybe, once he started hitting open threes, it started making a lot more sense overall, his game, again.
Obviously this doesn't necessarily have to do with right now, but do you think Dirk has another year in him?
I think he definitely does. I think I could see him having just a couple more years like this, where it's sort of, he gets like 16, 17 a game. as long as he's hitting open, like, he's gonna, the Mavericks can run plenty of sets to get him open looks. You know, he still gets plenty of open threes. And he still gets his, he can still post up and do his same thing. You know, I think, I'm pretty sure he's been a little bit worse on post ups. I'm just doing this based on the eye test. I haven't checked numbers. But it seems to me that he's been moderately worse on post ups this year. He's just not getting the same lift, I think, which, you know, even though he doesn't need that much separation, he still needs a little bit of separation. Yeah, I think he'll do this for a couple more years. I think he'll, you know, average like 17 and 6 for two more years. But that's a little bit confident, but we'll see. I don't know. I think he'll be fine. I mean, I think he won't be. We'll see. I think it just comes down to what can he save for the playoffs. You know, that we'll see how he does this year. Because as long as he's like, if he's just decent during the year and then can still sort of turn it on in playoff games and dominate a couple playoff games a series, then, you know, he's still worth a ton. He's still a great person to have around, just in life.
Yeah. I saw a video that was on Reddit. I think it was made by the Mavericks or something. And it was like, it had like all of Dirk's great moments, and it was to shut up and dance. And it was like, it was like almost like Dirk was like about to pass away. Like, it was just like, like.
There. Yeah, we have to get the 3 years of retirement videos, you know, started like immediately, and just keep, you know, maybe like we just play like a 2011 playoff montage over and over again for the next 2 years. Yeah, it's always emotional. It's always emotional with there.
Yeah, I'm with it. I mean, I loved it. I almost cried when I was watching it. So
I still cry every once in a while when I watch some of his great moments, because. I don't know. I mean, there's just something about, you know, there's just something about his, you know, he's playful, you know, he's emotional. He's just sort of, he's a very developed person. I mean, like, not, I don't want to call someone a character. I mean, but like, as far as like our understanding of Dirk as like people that have watched him and he's representing the franchise for 15 years or whatever, he's really shown all these different sides and all this sort of, this great feeling and this great, sort of playfulness and funniness, and I don't know, just the three dimensionality that we've gotten to see and sort of experience. And I don't know. I just think he's like your cool uncle or something. I don't know. I just feel like he's like a cool uncle I have, which is a weird relationship to have to an athlete. But, you know, I grew up watching him sort of smile and every once in a while grit his teeth and score 35 points in a playoff game. I don't know. It's just a weird mix of. He's just a great mix of things.
Yeah. No. He's definitely one of those characters that is, you know, like you're saying, he's fully developed. Like, it's just like, you know, you get like all these different sides of him, and like, I think a lot of people that have watched him can appreciate all those sides of Dirk. And yeah, it's gonna be. At least we have all this time. I'm glad we're preparing now. For the long goodbye.
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, I don't know.
No, yeah, but no. Continue.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I was just thinking. I just think anybody that watches Dirk, I think, for any kind of period of time, it's really impossible not to feel very close to him. I think he just sort of welcomes you in. Everything about him just sort of welcomes you in. And I mean, there are other players where you can sort of sense that. I mean, I'm sure Spurs fans with Tim Duncan have a similar relationship, but I don't know. Just something about Dirk. For me, it's hard for me to not see him as sort of someone close to me almost, even though, as far as I know, he and I have never had a conversation.
As far as you know.
I've been to Dallas a couple times, but, I mean, I've had plenty of one-sided conversations with him, but that's basically it.
I think we were talking about, you know, turning it on in the playoffs. Obviously, there's one guy who's pretty famous for turning it on when it's a nationally televised game or when it's a playoff game. What have you seen from Rondo? Has what you have seen from Rondo make you think that he could turn it on?
I mean, there's been – I have a trouble sort of imagining him turning it on, really, because there's just been this weird – I think early on when he first came, I had a belief that he could really turn it on, and because teams were sort of giving him the pick and roll with Chandler, I felt, and he was able to sort of get a lot of classic Rondo assists with Tyson.
And I think teams started to sort of take away that easy alley-oop, easy sort of pick-and-roll move from Rondo. And since then, it's sort of been like he's sort of negotiating the offense and trying to figure out, you know, him and Monte is a weird fit. It's a very weird fit. It's an extremely weird fit. And since they took away the Tyson option a little bit, I feel that he's sort of been floating and – but he has been a little bit better lately. So, if the Mavs going to just get him to be good, just give them – you know, if Rondo can just maybe like 10 points, 8 assists type games, I mean, not like – nothing insane, but just sort of a solid Rondo game where Monte still gets to run an ample number of pick and rolls, I think is a success at this point and gives the Mavs a chance. I'm having trouble imagining him totally turning it on because I just don't think the team makes enough sense for that to happen, but I could be totally wrong. I mean, I recently was rewatching that game he had where he scored like 40 something points, in the Eastern Conference, like,
oh, in the
semifinals.
Against Miami?
Against Miami, yeah. Game 4, maybe?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I remember that game.
Yeah,
he had like 44 or something like that, and they still lost, right?
They still lost. He had like 44, 12, and 8 or something like that, and they still lost. It's hard for me to even picture that him having that kind of game for the Mavs, but you know it could happen just because he's Rondo, and they have been making an effort to push a little bit in transition, to go a little bit faster, to get Rondo some easy assist opportunities, because the offense has been sort of stalling with its new iteration of itself
for months. I really liked Jameer on that team, and that was kind of one part of that trade. I mean, Jameer is small. He's undersized. He can't really play defense against some of the best guys, but, like, he could always shoot. I think he was, like, the best shooter of all their point guards. And eye test. I don't know.
I don't know for sure. I think I like the idea of him a lot, but he was sort of a little bit struggling at the start of the season, I think. And I don't know. I'm not sure. Go ahead.
But I don't know. I think Rondo. I don't know. Has Rondo? Can he not shoot free throws still?
He cannot shoot free throws at all. It's absolutely. He's still around 40%. I mean, there's been no uptick. You know, you think there's going to be a slight uptick, he'll get up to like 48% or something. That hasn't happened at all, I don't think. I think he's still around 40%. He's still shooting like from three about what he's like. I think he shoots around this, like, not that, like, lately has shot similar from three that he shoots from the free throw line. Like, I feel about watching him shoot like one of his brick sort of threes that sometimes goes in, I feel about the same as when he's shooting a free throw. I mean, something is terribly wrong with the free throws, like horribly wrong, and it can't be fixed on the fly, apparently.
Didn't he work with Dirk's shooting coach? I don't know his name. The German guy.
Yeah, I think he did, but I still think he's. I don't know. I haven't seen anything. He doesn't really shoot many free throws, too, so it's hard to really judge because he doesn't. I mean, I can't imagine he shoots more than a few a game at most. He really does not get to the line very much. I guess maybe that's on purpose because he doesn't want to go to the line. But it's very rare that he even goes to the line. So lots of times you see, Devin Harris will play a lot of the fourth quarter, or Brea will, who I don't think the Mavs lineups with Brea are my favorite, especially in the fourth quarter. But and I think that's one of Carlisle's big weaknesses is that he, Carlisle, great coach, but I often think that he relies on certain veterans that he loves a little bit too much. And Brea is one of those guys where I think he relies on him a little bit too much sometimes, but I do like Devin Harris a lot, and you do see him a lot in the fourth quarter for long stretches, and then maybe Rondo comes back in with 2 or 3 minutes left because you might want to have Monte take over in the fourth quarter, and sometimes Rondo and Monte are like oil and water. So they really are. I mean, it really is sort of – it's a weird fit sometimes, so the big debate with Mavs fans, to some extent, has been, if there has to be only one that comes back next year, is it Rondo or Monte?
Have you decided? Is it Monte for you?
I mean, I've grown to like Monte more, just because he's been incredible in fourth quarters. He's been pretty a nice surprise over the last couple of years, but he's really struggled lately. And I mean, I don't know who would be the better. I think it's really hard to say who would be the better. Who is the better player to keep long term? But I personally just have more of a connection to Monte, and so emotionally, I vote Monte. Intellectually, I don't know who I would say. It's hard to say.
Right. I haven't really seen enough to opine on this, either one. I remember reading some stuff that, there were some questions about whether Monte should be the focus of the offense, but and the article I read suggested that Chandler Parsons be the guy, but obviously that's not happening right now with his knee.
Yeah, I mean, Chandler was – it's really frustrating because I really loved to watch Chandler, and I think – his pump fakes, his sort of glides, his great – his finishing. He looks great. He's grown into it, and he's figured it out a little bit. He's never going to be one of the best players in the league, but he's grown into it. He was really starting to figure out his place in the offense before these last couple injuries. And so, I mean, I really hope he's healthy because the Mavs cannot – I mean, Kirk Henderson said similar – he's a Mavs writer – said a similar thing that – I mean, yeah, the fact is, if Parsons doesn't play, if it comes down to Richard Jefferson, who is fine, but the Mavs aren't going to win a playoff series against a good team without Parsons. Because he is the best player on the team at this point, in my opinion, when he's healthy. So, especially since Monte's three has fallen off so hard. I think he's shooting 28% from three now, which, I mean, historically he's like a 32% three-point shooter, but it can make a big difference. Between 28 and, 33, it's a big difference as far as how defenses play you and how possessions work, you know what I mean? If you're shooting 33, you have to be respected a little bit. Those shots are still somewhat valuable, possibly, if you're wide open. If it's 28, then you sort of get into sort of sketchy territory where you really shouldn't be shooting threes at all, really, at that point.
Yeah.
So,
at this point, with... two games left in the season, or one game, 2 days, one game for basically every team. Mm-hmm. Is there an opponent that you prefer or that you'd like to see the Mavericks play against? Because it looks like, if the Spurs hold on tomorrow, that it's going to be them.
Yeah, I think it'd be really fun if it was the Spurs. I don't really want that because I don't think that's... I think they're the scariest team to play right now of the possible opponents. Of the Rockets, Spurs, Clippers, which it seems like those are the three it could be. The Spurs might be the scariest of those three to play, even though the Clippers have been pretty good of late too, right? I think that they've sort of...
The Clippers have looked pretty good, and, I mean, Paul has just been, the under-the-radar MVP of just, they have nothing on the wing, and it's just it's insane how they are still they could still theoretically get the 2 seed if they win tonight and San Antonio loses.
Yeah, and JJ Redick has sort of turned into like an 18 point a game type player, a legitimate second or third option, right?
Yeah, I mean he's been great, and then Matt Barnes is he does what he does, but then you go to the bench and. Crawford has gotten healthy, which has been good for them. And Blake has been Blake. He's been, he's been good.
And Blazer's great.
Yeah, Blazer's great. Blake Griffin. Or Jamal Crawford, I guess. Jamal Crawford's a Blazer legend.
Blazer legend Jamal Crawford, yeah.
Who they boo every time he comes to town. Because of that, they lump him in with Raymond Felton. Another Blazer great who's on the Mavericks. We could see underrated storyline is we could see how many is Raymond Felton going to get the start?
For the final game, right? I think he's earned it with that game winner against the Nuggets. With that, he floated about 50 feet in the air for this game winning layup. It was amazing. He looks like the most athletic play by him. He broke whoever some Nuggets guard's ankles and then floated it 20 feet in the air off the glass for the game-winning layup in double overtime. And I was like, "Who is this person?" And he was like, "I'm Ray Felton." But it was Yeah, I don't know. I hope he gets a start. I have a soft spot for him. I don't think he's going to play in the playoffs at all, but, you know, I don't honestly think he gives you that much less than Brea, but maybe I just am harsh on Brea. I think I like Brea fine, but I don't know. I think I hope that Dwight Powell gets some run out. You know, I'm a big fan of Dwight Powell. He's like the Mavericks, like 14th man rookie. I hope he gets some run out against the Blazers. Apparently, Parsons isn't going to play.
Yeah, or Harris. I saw that Harris isn't going to play either.
Yeah, I mean, that's what happens when you have mostly old players. You get a lot of injuries, like that. You know, not Parsons, but like, you know, Harris and Dirk having Tyson having issues sometimes, and Monte and Rondo. You know, Rondo's not old; he's medium. He's middle aged, I guess. But yeah, I don't know. I hope we get to see some Myers Leonard too. He's healthy, right?
Yeah, I mean, Myers Leonard is like one of the only healthy guys on the Blazers right now, and I mean, Lillard is gonna play. Solely for the purpose of keeping his consecutive game streak alive. And I don't know, he'll probably play like 5 minutes or something. I mean, I wouldn't bet on him playing more than that. So we'll see.
Is he like the Cal Ripken of the Pacific Northwest? What's his consecutive game streak like?
He hasn't missed a game in his career. So
wow.
164 plus, you know, 82 more is like what, 246 would be the total after tomorrow. So he's at 245 right now.
So wow, 3 seasons of total health. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, it's been pretty good. I don't know though, like, obviously he wants to keep the streak going, but I think there are some, they rely on him so much on offense that obviously his defense has been getting picked apart on the internet for the last like 3 weeks. And rightfully so, he's not really a great defender, but like, and it's also been harder to hide him ever since Wesley Matthews went down, because Matthews was by far their best defender. And, I also think part of it is that since he's been to the playoffs now and he knows how grueling it is, he will never admit to this, but I definitely think he takes plays off like all the time. Like he takes stretches of the game off. I swear.
Yeah. I mean, I believe it. And I think it's always really funny when you can see a player doing that, because I sometimes see, I mean, I was just talking about how much I love him, but it is funny to see Dirk play defense sometimes, because lots of times you just watch him stand still and watch as someone sprints by him. Partially because he knows he has no hope of stopping the guy, and partially because I just don't feel like he feels like it at this point. He's sort of like, you know, he gives great effort, but there's just certain things he knows he can't do. So it's a little bit different than Damian, but it is funny to watch.
Right, because Damian has the athleticism to hang with a lot of these guys, and it just, he doesn't, it, like, he still, and it's funny, like, there was a game against the Spurs, or not the Spurs, the Warriors. I confuse the two because they're both unstoppable. They didn't have Aldridge. It was a home game. They were starting Alonzo G. And I had never seen him go around screens the way he was going around. Like, he was getting around Bogut screens, around Draymond screens, like, easily. Like, not even, like, any problem. But then, you know, he'll just have games where he just, like, he'll ball watch and he'll just stand there and he'll get caught by a guy going for an offensive rebound and he won't block him out after a switch, or, you know, he gets caught on another screen and they're throwing an alley-oop and he just stops running, you know? And it's like, I mean, he had some of those moments last night against Westbrook, but like at the same time, I can't really blame him. And Stotts isn't going to ever bring up his defense. Like, Stotts has just created like a cocoon around him. Like, he's not going to criticize his defense, so he's not going to hear about it from his coach. So, if I'm Damian Lillard, like, why would I play defense?
It's almost like a Harden thing, a little bit, right? It sounds to me like almost like last year Harden, a little bit. Not quite as bad, probably. You know, he's probably a little better, but he just sort of doesn't really, he's just, he's willfully deciding to take some possessions off.
I do think that happens. I think in the playoffs, he's going to turn it up. I mean, last year in the playoffs, his defense was pretty, it was pretty decent. It wasn't bad at all. Like, they would switch pick and rolls with, because they always do that Houston 1-2 pick and roll where they switch, and then the Blazers would switch with Lillard and Matthews or whatever and put Lillard on Harden, and he would force Harden to shoot mid-range jumpers. I mean, it wasn't like, you know, Harden – I mean, Harden had a bad series, but, I mean, he wasn't getting destroyed or exploited or anything like that in that series. So I think that come playoff time, he also mentioned – and this is a long time ago. He might not even remember saying this, but – someone asked him during the media day before the season started, like, what the biggest difference was between them and the Spurs. And he mentioned the number one thing was that they just didn't have the energy. And I think that it's something that having been there before in the playoffs, I think he is saving a little bit of energy. I just think he's probably learned that.
That's a really interesting quote. Wow. That's really illuminating, I think. That's the thing about the Spurs. I mean, really, you can see the Spurs. I mean, it's almost like the Spurs are like, okay, it's time to turn the energy on. It's time to win 10 games in a row. And I'm sure it's much more complicated than that. But, I mean, that's part of the reason. I mean, emotionally, narratively, like, I think it'd be really great for the Mavs to play the Spurs. Like, I would love to see Tim Duncan, Dirk, going at it one last time. I can't stand Spurs fans, to be honest. It's the only fan base that I don't like, basically. I think it's a very smug fan base. No offense to my friend Alex Dewey. I would love to see it, but it is terrifying the way that they turn it on and the way that, I mean, just year after year. I mean, I really didn't think that they were that great this year. And then, you know, they go on a 10 game win streak right before the playoffs start. And you think, wow, if they play the Mavs, if the Mavs don't play Parsons and Monte and Rondo are running into each other over and over again, it's going to be a 4-game series. I don't think that's what's going to happen. I would guess it would be a little bit closer than that in reality, but that could happen, you know? And that's pretty scary. I mean, who would you want the Blazers to play? Is it the Rockets or the Clippers? Is that sort of the two, Grizzlies, Rockets, or Clippers? Are they all still in contention?
All three of those teams are still in contention, and the Spurs, there's a couple of scenarios that are that Matt Moore went into, like, with some big spreadsheet that I'm not going to look at right now, where the Spurs could be the opponent in the first round. I think the Clippers would end poorly for the Blazers. The Blazers have a better bench, and if they have Batum, you could argue – if they have Batum and they get a Flalo back, you could argue that their starting wings are at least up there. Like, that they could match up with the Clippers. But Chris Paul has just dominated Damian Lillard. And the Blazers just released that Batum has a right knee contusion. So that is disaster avoided for the Blazers.
Yeah, it's like, that just means bruise, right?
Yeah. And that's okay. After an MRI.
Okay, that's good. That's good news, though. I mean, it's not – He'll probably just be back for the first game, right? Probably.
Yeah, that's probably the hope.
Yeah. Well, that's good. At least one knee is going okay.
Yeah.
I hope that I hope there's a release of Chandler Parsons' knee, totally fine. Carlisle. Totally okay. He's ready to go. But that's probably not gonna happen. I'm kind of worried about it.
Yeah, that's not good. But yeah, the crisis has been averted. I mean, just a bruise is good. But you don't know how I mean, yeah, we'll see what happens with that. But that was, I think that had everybody sweating. I mean, it had, you know, so that was, because I mean, if Batum was out, I mean, that would have been. Like, they would have been lucky to win a game in a series. Like, Alan Crabb would have been playing major playoff minutes, like 30 minutes a game we're talking about. Alan Crabb and Alonzo G. Like,
it's a lot of three-pointers, you know. It's a lot of Alan Crabb would have taken the moment, I think. Gone back to his Cal days. Actually, he wasn't that great at Cal, in my opinion, but
it was a downtime for the Pac-12.
It's always a downtime for the Pac-12, but no, I mean, it's not that bad. I guess this year the regular season was pretty rough, but if the Blazers play the Grizzlies, how do you think that? I'm curious how would that match up in your opinion? Would that be okay? Like, is that a better option? So I'm always really afraid of the Grizzlies for some reason. I think it's just because they have, like, the opposite ethos of the Mavs.
I think that one thing that I think I could tell you one person who doesn't want that series is Aldridge. I don't think Aldridge wants any part of Z-Bo in like, because, like, and the Grizzlies, I think in the last game they played him in Memphis, like, they, like, whacked his hand a bunch of times, and, like, his hand is the one that has, like, a torn ligament on it.
Oh, yeah.
In his thumb, and, like, Tony Allen whacking at that, and Z-Bo whacking at that, and for an entire series, like, I mean, other teams are going to do it, but I don't think any team is going to do it as shamelessly as the Grizzlies will.
Yeah.
And I think that I think that Aldridge, that's a series that he doesn't want. I don't think anybody on the Blazers can really guard Marc Gasol, even though he's kind of – his production's kind of tailed off. But, you know, playoffs, it's 0-0. There's no trends that carry over. It's a whole new thing. But Conley – I think Conley has – I think it's plantar fasciitis or something like that. And that is a little bit concerning on their end, I think.
Yeah, that's the worst. That's like, yeah. That's the worst. It's, yeah. Like, awful. Even it sounds terrible, and it is terrible. It's one of those injuries, right? Plantar fasciitis sounds like some sort of like fungus or growth, but it's actually worse than that.
Yeah, it's like a ligament that's like, isn't it just like a part of your foot that's like slowly tearing?
Yeah, and my understanding of it is that it's extremely. I'm not a medical doctor, but my understanding is that it's a very difficult, like, it doesn't actually heal really, sort of, right? Or something, like, it doesn't really, like, it's not a natural healing thing.
Yeah, I think Pau Gasol had it a few years ago and had to, like, sit out for a month or something like that to get it finally back, and he still wasn't, like, 100% after that. And Noah has dealt with it a lot. Joakim Noah, I think, has had lots of plantar fasciitis issues.
You don't see it with point guards as much. That's maybe a little bit of a surprise, but yeah, I always feel like it's big old centers that are pressing down 300 pounds on their feet. But Mike Conley too.
Yeah, I guess Mike Conley is now he's breaking barriers. I think overall that series wouldn't be too bad for the Blazers. They haven't really. It's weird because. I think the consensus on Memphis is that Jeff Green has, like, ruined their team from a
lot
of
Jeff Green. Give Jeff Green a break.
Yeah.
You know, he's out there doing his best.
But I just don't – if he plays against the – he's had some really good games against the Blazers. And now that Darrell Wright is injured, which was, like – or only, like, you know, he's, like – Myers Leonard is a stretch four, but he's 7 feet tall. Like, Darrell Wright was, like, the only guy that you could really – play a small ball lineup with on their team, because I think Batum might not be the type of guy for that, but who knows, maybe I'm wrong, but they just, without Jarrell Wright, they don't really have anybody that can match that matchup with having Jeff Green play four. And I think that the Portland matchup is like the one matchup where Memphis could really that where the Jeff Green thing could actually be like a huge advantage for them, because I don't think that Portland can really match up with them, because I mean Myers Leonard had trouble staying in front of Trevor Booker the other night, and so as much as he's improved, if he can't stay in front of Trevor Booker, I mean, I don't expect him to stay in front of Jeff Green very well.
Yeah, you know, Trevor Booker has a really deceptive speed. But I don't think I'm glad I got to use that phrase, deceptive speed.
Yeah.
I hope Mike Conley gets healthy, because Mike Conley versus Damian Lillard is sort of one of those slightly not first, like, it's not like a first, it's not like the kind, it's not like Chris Paul versus Steph Curry, but it's one of those things where you have like the two, like really two different styles of point guard going against each other, and both really good at what they do.
And so we haven't seen it, really.
We haven't really seen it.
Yeah.
It's just a weird mix where it's sort of, it's good, but neither is like Superman, you know, neither is full on one of the best players in the league. But both are really good and both do the position and play the game completely differently, you know, or quite differently at least.
Yeah, I'd like to see that. It's another story, like, for the Blazers, obviously, that is going to be big, and no one really knows when it's gonna resolve itself, is the Aflalo injury. Like, he hurt his shoulder. They said last Friday he was going to be out for 2 weeks, or 1 to 2 weeks, but, you know, whenever he comes back is going to be big for them, because he can kind of do some things that they could, that's really important in the playoffs. He's a really good post-up player. He likes to, he really likes to take one-on-one matchups. I don't know how good that is for Portland's offense, but, like, if things get bogged down, he can at least get you something.
Yeah.
And, they need him, because Crabbe, while he's improved and he's played, he doesn't really have a lot of confidence in his own off the dribble game yet. Like, a lot of plays, you'll see him come off a pick and roll, take two dribbles, and then turn around and look to pass it off instead of, like, trying to get to the rim or trying to drive into a pull-up jumper or something. So I just don't think his confidence is quite there yet with his off the dribble game to really, you know, count on him to play in those minutes. I mean, he might be able to hit a couple spot up threes for them in the playoffs, but they're going to need something else outside of Lillard and Aldridge and you know, Batum, depending on how this knee is treating him. I mean, he can be that type of guy that takes over a game. Like, I mean, granted, he was doing it in the FIBA World Championships against small people that aren't that athletic for a lot of those teams. But he's got to take his game to another level. Like, they need a third scorer, and I just don't know where that's going to come.
Well, maybe he's just been waiting all season to turn it on. You know, I guess that's sort of that'd be great if that was the case, that the all the sort of concerns and struggles that he's had, like, melted away. And he sort of took over a play. I mean, it can kind of be very freeing just to take over a playoff game. I think that sort of can turn everything back around. Even though I'm sure the issue goes much deeper than that. But
yeah, I think actually a lot of his issues stemmed from that very World Championship tournament where he was, like, first team all tournament, and he, like, basically in the latter rounds, like, carried France to, like, their best finish in the history of their country in the World Championships.
Yeah.
And then, like, he came back and just had no energy, like, and I think he was mentally burned out. And then he's been a different player since the All-Star break. But, you know, now with Matthews gone, he's not only going to have to step it up offensively, like, he's going to have to carry the mantle of being, like, the team's best defender. Like, he has no choice but to do that. Like, he's going to have to guard Harden for a lot of that.
I think there's been a lot of
sort of whoever.
So that parallels to some extent with some of the issues that the Mavs and Blazers have had. I mean, the Blazers have sort of, they've struggled lately a bit, right? Record, like, they've sort of, what's their record lately?
They have been, like, I mean, they just haven't really played that well. I think they've been stuck on – they got, like, 50 wins last week. Let's check their last few. They are
– I think that they're
3-5 in their last 8 games. They won 4 in a row against, like – after they had lost 5 in a row. So they haven't been great. Their record since the All-Star break has not – you know, been very good. I think they've had a worse finish to the season this year than they did last year. You know, last year they went into the playoffs on a hot streak. They won 9 of 10 going in, and now they're just kind of, also the injuries have just killed them. But their defense just hasn't been very good. I saw a stat from Seth Partno of Nylon Calculus. He posted a pretty astonishing stat. Because I was trying to, you know, you're trying to figure out, you know, what is really going wrong? Like, is it just that they don't have Matthews anymore? And he tweeted out that since the All-Star break, Portland's opponents have been hitting 40% of their contested threes.
Wow.
So, and before the All-Star break, Portland had the second best three-point defense in the league. Like their opponents were shooting like 32%, and now they're shooting 37%, which is like third worst in the league since the break. So I wonder if that luck is going to carry over, whether it's going to even out or not. It's going to be weird to see in the playoffs how they adjust. But if they play Memphis, I mean, Memphis doesn't really have a lot of shooters.
Well, it's pretty interesting how I don't know. I think it's pretty interesting how you think that because they won 9 out of 10, and because they were relatively injury free going to the playoffs last year, right? I mean, they had Wes.
They had everybody. Yeah.
They had everybody, and you can sort of. I'm guessing at the time that everybody sort of felt great about them, and they did well going into the playoffs. But it really is. I mean, I wonder how much has anybody done like a study on. You know, I'm sure that somebody's written like an Harwood Paroxysm article about this, or Seth Parnow, or one of those people has written something like this, but about how performance right before the playoffs affects playoff performance. You know, it probably is meaningless, but. You know, it's usually good to assume that things are meaningless until they are not meaningless. But I would be curious to see how that affects, because it seems like everything is going against the Blazers right now, or a lot of things are, but it might be totally meaningless. You know?
Yeah. No, that's absolutely true. I mean, Batum, I mean, I think they played the Clippers. After they played the Clippers and they lost, Chris Paul had like 42 and 17 or something like that. And someone asked Batum, you know, does it worry you that, you know, you've lost to this team 3 times out of 4? You know, how concerning is that for you? And he brought up the point that, you know, the Blazers did play well, but last year against Houston, they lost 3 of 4. And they still managed to win the series. So I think it is safer to assume that things like that don't matter, especially because, you know, they haven't played Aldridge these last few games. And I think that Aldridge is – I think it's pretty easy to see that Aldridge is the – he's like the one equalizer in any series against almost anybody that – nobody can really guard him one-on-one.
I'm pretty sure Dirk can guard him.
Chandler might be able to.
Yeah, Tyson could do a good job. That would be an interesting matchup. I mean, if you do that and then you put Dirk on Robin, that would be a bit of a struggle, I think, though.
Yeah.
Robin would go off. I kind of hope it – yeah, I hope it doesn't matter because the Mavs have, if I'm correct, I'm pretty sure that the Mavs have losing records against almost all of the playoff teams. So I'm hoping that it's just totally meaningless and that really they're way better than all those teams, secretly. And they've sort of, it's going to, in the playoffs, it'll come clear that they actually, all these like 1-3 records they have against playoff teams are, you know, totally moot. That's probably not the case, though. But I'm pretty sure the Mavs don't even have winning records against almost, I'm not sure about this, but I know that overall they have a losing record against playoff teams, and I'm pretty sure most teams they have a losing record against that are playoff teams. That is, I'd be curious to see who if they have anybody they're better than.
Yeah, I mean, obviously in a series it'll be more interesting. I would like to see a good series with them. You know, I'd like to see. I mean, Dirk against Duncan one more time would be fun. I might be in the minority of people that doesn't want to see Memphis Clippers again.
Yeah, I don't want to see that.
I think we've seen it enough times. And they always meet in the first round. I mean, it's not like it's like, you know, Lakers and Celtics here where they're competing for a championship and neither team goes on to do anything after that. I mean, recently. I'm not saying that that's going to happen this year, but, like, I'm just tired of it. Like, I get it. They don't like each other. any team that would play each other 3 times over the course of the last 3 years probably wouldn't like each other.
Yeah.
So I don't want to see that. I'd rather see Portland against Memphis or Portland against the Clippers.
Portland against Clippers. I think I would like that. I think it'd be a fun series to watch. So I'm gonna go with that. That's my favorite choice. Clippers Portland is what I want to see. That'd be sort of a. I think that'd be a very aesthetically pleasing series.
Well, I guess you got to become a Phoenix Suns fan tonight because I think if the Clippers play them tonight, and if they win, they can't drop past third, and Portland is locked in four.
All right, let's go. Let's go, Morris Brothers.
Yeah,
let's go, Twins.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's. God, did you hear that story about them?
No.
Oh. I didn't read anything about it. I had heard it on another radio show that they had had some issues with someone and, like, had someone beat somebody up. Allegedly. Not that.
Do you think that? I'm guessing Robin Lopez and Brooke Lopez never did that. They might have done that. Maybe they had somebody beat, like, maybe they, like, someone was reading, like, the wrong kind of, like, Marvel Unlimited comics and they got really mad about it and were like, How dare you read Ant-Man non-continuity issue? That's pretty insane. It's pretty fun to see, you know, Twins conspiring together. That's why I hope that the Blazers trade for is Brooke out of contract this year?
Brooke has a contract this year, and so does Robin. They're both in contract years.
Imagine playing Brooke. I mean, Brooke and Robin together, that could only work in college. It was great to watch when it was here, but I don't think that could work in the NBA. That would be a disaster, probably.
Yeah, it would be, considering, I mean, unless Brooke is totally cool with moving out of the low post, because he has a much better jumper than Robin. So
but it's not good enough for him to actually, you know, do it.
Yeah,
it's like, that's his game.
Yeah, he's not LaMarcus, so that's just not going to happen. But it would be cool, but it'll only happen in our minds and hearts.
LaMarcus at the three? I think that'd be good. LaMarcus at the three, Brooke at the four, Robin at the five. It'd be terrifyingly big and totally ineffective. It'd be great.
Just the positional revolution going the other way.
Yeah, everybody thought it would go one way, but now we're bringing in the Lopez brothers and LaMarcus Aldridge, and we're going to play Batum at the two, and it's going to be massive.
Yeah, that would be great. I'd love for a team to do that and just go all in on that, even though I think the Pistons tried to do that with Josh Smith and Monroe and Drummond, and that went very poorly.
That went great. So I think to go all in on totally nonsensical size, that's the way of the future in the NBA.
It's the new market inefficiency.
Yeah. Let's get like some kind of money ball thing about Brooke Lopez and Robin Lopez playing together.
I'm here for it. You guys, if anybody wants to take that theory and take it to the next level, just remember to credit the Blazer Banter podcast with Connor Hutchins.
Yeah, I also – please credit me with the concept of regression overall. That was me. That was me who did that.
That's right. Anything else you'd like to say about the playoffs? Who do you like to come out of the West?
I just hope the Spurs lose, to be honest. Sorry, Tim. And I like – you know, this is boring – but I like Warriors Clippers for the conference final. I just think that would be a fun matchup, and I think that's what's going to happen. That's what I'll pick. And, you know, I like the Warriors. I think it's really I like them on all levels, and I think that they also happen to be the best team by a decent margin. So I think it's, I don't know who else I could say honestly would do it. I like to say the Mavs, but I don't think it's going to happen. I think if the Mavs get to the second round, then that's a great achievement for them.
Yeah.
From the East, I think a Cavs Warriors final would be one of the most fun finals, maybe the most fun finals since 2011 for sure. So that's what I want to see.
I would love to see Cavs Warriors. I'm bummed about Thabo Sefolosha's leg.
Yeah.
And Paul Millsap's shoulder. Because the Hawks were a good story, and they were a fun team, but I just don't – the one team that I can see giving the Cavs an issue is Chicago. I'm not out on Chicago yet.
Wow, you're still in on Chicago.
I don't know what this may sound crazy. I think Mirotić could be like – I think he could cause some problems for – the Cavs.
Are you still in on Rahm Emanuel?
No, I'm not in on Rahm Emanuel. Isn't he the mayor now?
Yeah, he's the mayor.
Yeah, I'm not really in on Rahm Emanuel. I don't think he can guard LeBron. But yeah, I mean,
who do you like then? Who do you like to make the finals? What are you ready to say?
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I'm Cavs Warriors at this point. I just think the only team that could maybe even push the Cavs to a sixth game or a seventh game maybe is Chicago at this point. I don't see it with Atlanta anymore. I don't think Damari. I mean, Damari Carroll just like has to not only play amazing defense, but he cannot ever get in foul trouble.
Yeah,
because they don't have really anybody else that can hang with him.
You're not on board with the revamped Nets, with the Brook Lopez-led Nets.
They have to make the playoffs first.
Yeah, I know. They're not even going to make it.
I know.
It's going to be the Celtics, right?
It's the Celtics, or I think the Celtics clinched the seventh seed.
Okay.
And the Pacers have to win tonight and tomorrow. And Memphis will know, like, by halftime what their fate is.
Okay.
Because they tip off 90 minutes after the Spurs and Rockets tip off. So they'll know what their fate is. And so, you know, if it's in their best interest to win the game, I don't know how hard they'll go, but Indiana has to win that game. And they have to win tonight. And Washington, they're playing the Wizards, and the Wizards are, for Randy Whitman reasons, not resting their guys. So
Randy Whitman reasons. That's the name of my band, actually. We play a lot of synth. We do a lot of synth. Like 70s synth.
Randy Whitman reasons.
Randy Whitman reasons.
Coming to a stage near you.
Yeah, Palo Alto Bar near you. I love the Eastern Conference 8th seed. There's nothing like it. There's nothing like this sort of the race for the Eastern Conference 8th seed. It's a special thing in sports. There's nothing like it. It really brings out the best in 37-44 teams.
You sound like Terry Stotts.
I am a lot like Terry Stotts. I don't know anything about him, but I feel like I'm a lot like him. And he was a Mavericks assistant coach.
The only reason I say that is because for the last, like, I don't know, two, 3 weeks, people have been asking him, you know, have you been paying attention to the, you know, have you been scoreboard watching, you know, paying attention to the games in the West, who you might play. And then every time he talks about it, he always just goes off on a tangent about how great and entertaining the East 8th seed, 7th seed race is. And, like,
Pacers basketball.
There's no hint of sarcasm or snark or anything from him. And it's just, like, he would just look you straight in the face and talk about how entertaining and how great the race for the 8th seed is in the East. And I feel like he's trolling all of us. But maybe he just really loves Pacers basketball.
You should just get really specific about, like, CJ Miles or something. And be like, so what do you think of CJ? Do you think, like, are you sort of watching CJ every night? Like, wow, this is basketball at its best. I do. CJ's fine. I'm not calling out CJ. But I would love to get, like, whoa. Like,
what are your thoughts on Markell Brown?
Yeah. Go in depth. I need a long quote to sort of fill this story out. So just talk for a while, and we'll sort of pick out pieces that we like. Yeah. That's great. I love that he says that. That's really funny.
No, it's been one of the highlights of the end of the season for me. For me personally, is how much Terry Stotts loves the Eastern Conference playoff race.
Yeah, that's what it's all about.
All right. Thanks for coming on, Connor. All right, I had a fun time.
Yeah.
All right. Cool.